Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Must Hear Music podcast. My name is Joe Lynch and I am here with three people, not just two people. Speaking of a little crowded, Jason, we got Jason Lipschitz here.
What's up?
Lindsay Havens.
Hello.
And Andrew Unterberger.
Thanks for saving me a chair, Joe.
Thanks. I just realized, speaking of crowded, I have not one but two chapsticks in my pocket.
And that's speaking of crowded.
I realized that as I started introducing the podcast, I was like, why would I have two in my pocket? Like,
is one a little low and you just want to be on the safe side?
I don't know.
You probably keep one in a different pocket or something, but now they've ended up together.
I don't know why I have two. It's a mystery anyway.
Of all the things I thought you were going to say, wasn't that.
That's two more chapsticks than I've had in my pocket maybe in like 15, 20 years.
Ooh, I'm a big chapstick fiend.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Must hear chapstick.
Yeah, this time of year, you have must chap, no, must lip.
No,
stop. It's not going to work. Must apply lip balm.
There you go.
That'll be my separate podcast. Anyways, let's start with, so we got a couple big albums this week. But Andrew, I wanted you to come on, especially because I know you are the 1975 stan.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate being the esteemed representative for the 1975 tribe in this office. And I feel relatively comfortable calling the 1975 the best band in the world right now. And
Lindsay just choked a little bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the White Stripes broke off, Lindsay. I'm not sure if you realize that.
The tours are getting back together.
Jack White's band is what she would say.
But in any event, they released their third album today. It's called A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships. It is typically, bombastic and long and high concept and beautiful. It's genre spanning. There's incredible synth pop sort of songs. There's incredible ballads. There's incredible post punk exercises and kind of everything in between. There's R&B. There's some jazz touches. They're one of the more expansive bands of their generation, but also Matty Healy, the frontman, is just one of the best songwriters. I was thinking about it the other day, and it's the 1975. They sort of strike me as a band that started out as the Cars and became Radiohead, which is sort of if you go back to that first album, and this has been sort of a hill of mine of recent years, their first album's incredible. Got no critical attention and didn't get a lot of play
fans
in the U.S.
It garnered them a lot of fans.
And it took a while, I guess, they got a lot of young fans. It took a while for the adults to kind of catch on. But that first album's like a greatest hits. And if you told me like that's all they ever did, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. One dynamite album, they just kind of try to recreate it from there. But instead, they've just gotten better and better. I don't know whether or not I would want to call this my favorite 1975 album yet, because their first two albums are both great in their own way. But it certainly lives up. And even though the hype's been pretty deafening, this album just brought me so much joy listening to it last night and this morning on the way to the office. It's just incredible. And the song that I picked for us to talk about is called Be My Mistake. And I wouldn't call it necessarily one of my favorite songs on the album, but even though the five of the tracks have already been out there, and I think those are probably five of the strongest songs on the album. But this one kind of shows a different side of them, because it is a ballad, and it's sort of like a singer-songwriter type ballad, which they haven't done a lot of.
Yeah.
Most of their ballads tend to be kind of like the alt R&B sort of variety. This one is just Matty and a guitar and some kind of twinkles in the background. And it's a pretty new look for them, but I think it's great. I mean, it's very close. It's only like a couple tweaks away from being like a treacly Ed Sheeran kind of wedding song.
Yep.
But those tweaks really make all the difference, because it's a really like self-loathing and brutal kind of song. And it's called Be My Mistake, and it's basically inviting I don't know if it's a fan or so, someone like kind of like a hanger on to basically have a one night stand with him, but it's very purposefully unromantic. And like the closest thing to a romantic line in the song is something like the smell of your hair reminds me of her feet.
Wrote that down.
Yeah,
that line is incredible.
Yeah, and it's like what?
I went on. I went on
Genius solely to see what it said about that line, and I clicked on it, and the annotation starts in the Bible.
Wow.
And I was just like, no, okay, all right,
getting biblical with Matty Healy.
Well, wait, like what? Like washing feet with hair? Or
yeah,
something like that?
It was something along those lines. I'm the wrong person.
Whistle
to ask.
On that one, but
yeah, it might be a stretch.
Nonetheless, like that's the kind of song it is, where it's like anything that sounds like a come on is basically just like him talking about what a shitty and unreliable person he is and how guilty he feels about cheating on his girlfriend, who's a very like pronounced presence even though unseen in the song. And it's a very economical song. It does a lot of saying more with less. Mm-hmm. And it almost kind of sounds like a country song in that way to me, just the way that like the small phrases like that kind of suggest entire universes of hurt and longing and emotion. And I think it's not the first song anyone will point to when talking about what this album does well, I don't think, but it sort of illustrates just the kind of the scope of their talents and Matty Healy specifically. And I think it's awesome. How do you guys feel about the song? And if you've gotten the chance to listen, maybe the entire album?
I have not listened to the entire album.
I started
shorter than the last one.
It is shorter than the last one, thankfully. I mean, the last one's great, but it was very long. I started listening to it last night, but then I got tired. I was listening to it, I feel like, in like the perfect mindset, which was like buzzed from a couple drinks, like in bed, like dozing off to sleep. Like that seems like the way this should be listened to when
it's
I was listening to it, like
hour, sure.
In the harsh light of this morning. a couple of the songs, like I was like the one, what's it called? It's the story song. The man who married a robot, which is a bit, speaking of Radiohead, a bit like Fitter, Happier, on OK Computer. Definitely, listen, it makes some savvy points about, you know, technology addiction. And what was that movie, Her, with, it's sort of like
I heard about that movie.
Love that movie.
But it's too pretentious. Like, it follows the borderline and then it just like goes all the way.
It's too
preachy.
I'm writing something to this effect about some parts of this album later. But my theory is that song was put on the album just so the enemy would have no choice but to compare the album to OK Computer. Like, come on, we gave you guys a Fitter Happier.
That's pretty fair.
It's fucking OK Computer. Just say it's OK Computer.
Just say it's our OK Computer, please.
And it worked. They did. So,
but that being said, like the song you picked, Be My Mistake, is lovely. One thing I think kind of the Ed Sheeran comparison is great, but what it does, what you're saying is so true. Like it like avoids the kind of like generic MOR pitfall because, while he has this very simple, like guitar strumming going, there's this like plinking piano in the background, but it's playing totally against the melody of the guitar.
It's tense,
not like supporting the melody, it's playing against it. And this, those kind of touches that like make this just, that make them stand out really from their contemporaries. Like they're just a more interesting band. Like, you know, there's so much going on here. There's ambient stuff, there's R&B, there's dance music, there's rock, of course, there's, you know, your strummy weepers.
Love those strummy weepers.
Gotta love the
strummy weepers.
My favorite band, the strummy weepers.
Wow.
You like my band from high school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan.
We were not bad. I think it's super intriguing. I for me, like the jury's still out on like, what do I think of it critically? But like, I really enjoy it. So, I mean, I guess that means I'll probably like it.
You're hoping.
From the critical perspective. I feel like I need to sit with it. There's, you know, with their albums, there's just a lot going on.
A little bit, in the daytime hours of a couple fewer drinks in, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't really have much to add to, you know, we have a very similar opinion of the 1975, Andrew, and I love this band. I love this album. And the one thing I'll say is I love listening to this song after on the sequencing after Love It If We Made It, because that song is so much of everything and this huge kind of like anthem for 2018. And then this is almost like an exhausted coda. And I really enjoy how that's put together on the album. The one other thing I'll say is that, like, obviously people are reading a lot about this album this week and a lot about the 1975. And I would implore anyone who's just discovering the 1975, just like listen to the 2016 album, I Like It When You Sleep, because that was my favorite album of last year, of that year. I think that this is also an amazing record, but I think that like the leap from record one to two was just so staggering. And I after I listened to this one this morning, I started listening to my favorite songs from I Like It When You Sleep, and like Ugg is just like still just an incredible pop song, and the sound, and it's just like there are, it's one of the, I think one of the best records of the decade. And I just hope people, I know Lindsay's eyes are widening, but I really do. I think it was the best album that year. And
it's up there.
I would just say, like, if you're listening to this podcast and are just kind of poking around this new 1975 album, like, go back to the last one too. I mean, go back to the first one.
Yeah, your must-hear recommendation for 2018 is something came out.
Yeah, I totally am. Great. I mean, I just hope, because it really does feel like no one's sleeping on this new record, whereas I think that some people might have slept on.
Yeah,
the,
and then
the
there's a little bit of that kind of overcorrective. I was comparing this to at least in terms of the media response to Oasis's "Be Here Now," where it's a little flashback here. But like in the '90s, obviously Oasis, their first two albums were very, very like commercially successful in the UK and a little bit so over here as well. But the critics didn't really get on the second album, What's Story Morning Glory. It kind of got panned in the moment. And so when Be Here Now came out, everyone went out of their way to just like keep as much praise on it as possible because no one wanted to be caught, you know, kind of with their pants down again. And then the album turned out to really maybe not be so great. But I think this album, like just from the songs that were out before its release, it was pretty clear this album's going to be better than Be Here Now.
Yeah.
And I'd say the rest of us lived up to it too. So, Lindsay, I think you just messaged me saying this 1975 song, holy shit. So you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yes. I love this song. But so let me start by saying I'm not a fan, but that's more just because of my own like ignorance of them. I've sort of just passed them up for the past few years. I think it really dates back to when I first heard Chocolate in a car in college. And I hated that song.
The lyrics of that song are a little low.
And I
love that. When I first heard that, I was like,
I love that song.
I
love Chocolate.
But then I saw them live and I changed my mind on them.
Love that song.
Yeah, I think I just haven't had that moment yet where I've like given them another chance. Like I remember that moment vividly because I really did not like that song. And ever since, I was like, oh, that's the kind of music they make. That's the kind of band they are. And I mean, judging by everything I'm hearing and have heard, that's not the case at all. So I think that it's time for me to give them another shot and go back a little bit.
Have a try.
This song really, really surprised me, just considering that I haven't really listened to them. It's pretty different from what I would have expected. And it sounds like it's an outlier on the album, too.
It's an outlier, but it's connected. Like there's other songs on it that kind of touch on some similar things.
Yeah, I thought this was beautiful. Because I like the fact that it's a ballad, but the lyrics are so far from anything ballad-esque. So that contrast was really appealing to me. But yeah, I think it's time for me to consider the 1975.
Wow.
Jason says maybe go to the second album, maybe go to the first album. I say just go to their Spotify artist page, hit play.
All right. Fair enough.
You'll not be disappointed.
I think we have to mention there's a self-titled song on this album. It starts with a self-titled song.
So there's the last one.
That there's a version of that song that starts every one of their albums, but it's always like different music, but the same words, and it's like a minute long, and just kind of ramps up to whatever the first single of the album is, which is usually the second track.
Yep. Right. But I mean, that's like, I think that kind of like speaks to their thing. Like that's in one sense, it's like sort of silly, but it's also like. It's a cool idea, actually, and like it's a cool through line.
They're very self-aware. Like they understand how they're being perceived and what kind of, you know, what kind of poses they need to strike.
Now, I've said this about them before, but it's the difference between being self-aware and being self-conscious. They are self-aware, but they're not self-conscious. And
right.
That's what most of the great like pop acts are like because you have to know how people are perceiving you, but you have to kind of not care about it.
Right.
Yep. And
there's a song title, Sincerity is Scary.
Too true.
Which is very true. And I think that is like one of their strengths is that they're able to kind of, you know, be sincere, but without being mawkish because they are like pretty self-aware of where they are.
Talented group of gentlemen.
They really are. No, they're great. And I also love the song title, I Like America, and America Likes Me.
Increasingly true. Number one album last time around. Well, we'll see if they can get it this time. They got some competition.
They do have some competition, which we'll get to in a second.
Teaser.
But
ooh,
anyways.
Ooh.
Yeah, so did anyone want to, are we 1975'd out?
No, it was a good
It was a good
chat.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's do it. So the song, which I already forgot the title, is Be My Mistake. It's from the 1975 from the new album, A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships.
Be my mistake. turn out the light. She bought me those jeans, the ones you like. I don't want a hug.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, that was new, the 1975.
Very quickly, before we move on, I'm just like, 30 seconds. You think they're the best rock band in the world, just band in the world?
Yeah, just, I mean, if you want to call them a rock band, you don't, that's fine.
Lindsay blanched at that idea. I would agree. I think that they've definitely earned
just
that.
Crazy,
Joe, what do you
me.
Think?
I feel like no, but then when I'm thinking what is the best rock band, I'm coming up blank, so let me come back to that.
Imagine Dragons.
I mean, I know you're
the Lumineers.
They get a tough, like, Andrew. Like, yeah, I think Imagine Dragons have a good claim to that crown. But like, no, I mean, they're not my favorite. So
we've talked about Paramore before, maybe being in that discussion. So
Paramore.
Like, in 2018, though, like, no, that's not like maybe when their self-titled mm-hmm. came out, they could lay claim to that. I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know,
Fire.
Rock isn't like, you know, the biggest thing right now.
That's true.
And I think it's for, I mean, I guess when it comes down to is like, also my favorite rock bands are not the ones where you would start saying like, are they the biggest rock band in the world? Like, mm-hmm. I think the good rock coming out is the like more DIY, the stuff playing like DIY venues. Like,
yeah.
It's not the people like making inroads on
radio.
Also
a lot of solo artists, you know, Mitski, St. Vincent.
Right. Yeah. And that's very true.
Yeah, like it's become more it's shifted further and further away from the band, and I think that's one of the things that makes the 1975 interesting, is that they had like even though, you know, Matty is very clearly the mouthpiece and he's the one who does all the interviews and stuff, they've been very, very like focused in making sure that every like the spotlight still kept on the band as
totally.
As a unit, and you know, he hasn't done anything outside of them, and you know, it's I think he sees the importance in kind of that band construct.
I would agree. All right, cool. Well, let's do the album which will probably beat them for number one on the Billboard 200 if I was a betting man. So we have, which I'm not, so I'm not going to put down a wager, so don't try to win any money off of me, Lindsay.
All right,
you card
you
shark.
Me.
All right, so yeah, new Meek Mill album, Championships. This is his, it's being called a comeback, which sort of seems like a weird, you know, it's like,
yeah.
In a way, like, he needs a comeback in the sense that he's been out of the public eye simply because of his legal problems. It's not like he had like a huge commercial failure mm-hmm. that he like needs to bounce back from.
I feel like he definitely released an album within the last 2 years. I don't know. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but there have been Meek Mill albums. Or
yeah.
But maybe, I don't know if they were referred to specifically as albums or...
Wins and Losses was last year.
Yeah, that was like a proper album, right? Not,
yep.
like, not like a mixtape. Okay, so.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, I guess it fits a narrative. A lot of people are like referring to this as his big comeback, you know? And I think, you know, this is like the point where like, the public opinion has like completely turned in his favor. Like, there's no doubt. Like, everyone's like, yeah, the guy got a raw deal. he's extremely talented and like, let's rally behind him. And, you know, sure enough, this is, you know, it's called Championships. This is an album with a lot of high profile guests. It has a pretty big, expansive sound. It's just this very like solid, assured thing, which is, you know, makes sense where he is in his career. But the song I wanted to hone in on, there's a lot to talk about. It's called What's Free, and it features Rick Ross, which is his label boss, and Jay-Z, who he owns. Obviously, Jay-Z owns Roc Nation, and he is, I think, has them, like, Roc Nation does his management. So in a sense, he's kind of working with like two of his bosses on a track, who also happen to be, you know, two MVPs when it comes to guest verses. The song is super interesting. Like, Meek's verse is like really notable because he, you know, addresses his legal issues. But he kind of like turns it. There's just a great verse where he's like, you bring up my name to the judge, you tell them the facts. And then he lists all the good things that he's done instead of, you know, like focusing. Basically, he's like, hey, the facts of my life are I'm like helping people get through college. I'm trying to stop violence in the community, blah, blah, blah. So that's a like real like firm, well-worded, like assured statement from him. But the Jay-Z verse is the one that's getting all the attention. Yeah. You know, Billboard even gets a shout out. It's not the most positive shout out.
Woke up to a lot of texts about that.
But the thing, you know, Jay's verse is fantastic. And I think it's getting misinterpreted, though. I mean, like a lot of people are like, oh, this is a slam on Kanye. Like,
right.
It really isn't at all. Like, he's, you know, so the verse, just to read what he says, he's saying, no red hat, don't Michael and Prince me and Ye. They separate you when you got Michael and Prince's DNA. Like all the headlines are like Jay-Z is like biting back against Kanye. Like what he's actually saying is he's saying, you know, he's like, yeah, I don't do the mega shit, but don't try to like pit us against each other. Basically, like right. We both have the, you know, same like greatness DNA in us. Like we don't need that. You know, we're not against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So people are like totally misinterpreting this verse. But otherwise, like the song itself is super interesting. It comes from Notorious B.I.G.'s What's Beef, which was a song that's basically like him being like in the 90s, like talking about like people talk about rapper beef. And he's like, that's not what real beef is. What real beef is, you know, things when you like are worried for your mom's safety and something like this. And this kind of takes it to a different level. And it's saying what's free. But it's talking about, you know, what's freedom is not simply, you know, living in the United States, but it's like having actual freedom from, you know, the prison industrial complex and blah, blah, blah. And just before I stop yapping about this, the interesting little fun fact about the strings in this. So the strings come from the B.I.G. song, What's Beef, which sampled a soul orchestral version of The Carpenters' Close to You. So that's what these strings come from.
Wow.
So
Bacharach and David writing credit on this, I guess.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Very nice.
So it's a weird, circuitous route from The Carpenters to Meek Mill.
Long life.
And anyway, but what do you guys think about this? What's free, Jay-Z, Meek Mill, Rick Ross,
wow.
The boss?
No, keep going.
Yeah, keep going, Joe.
This is the lost verse.
Yeah, I mean, this is less of a song than three verses kind of tied together with a with some sort of hook. I mean, obviously Jay-Z sounds great. I think the Rick Ross verse ends on a very clumsy note. I think we could all agree. Yeah, I mean, it's worth it. It's worth the price of admission to hear Jay-Z still sound this great and this kind of dexterous on the mic. But, you know, the song itself, I think there are like more compelling songs on this album than just kind of like a very long showcase for just these verses.
Yeah. We talk about like guest verses a lot in terms of like where they're placed within the song, if they're actually a collaboration or just sent in separately. I think what's most interesting about this is I feel like this song is just like giving Jay-Z's verse a home. Like that verse is so good, but like it couldn't exist on its own. So this is almost just like an infrastructure for that to shine, and it is doing exactly that. It's getting all
the
shine.
I think the Meek verse is
not that the rest is nearly equal, though.
I think it's also like pretty fantastic, and I like that they're both of the way that their flow in this is like very like slow and methodical. Like they have a lot of points to make, and they hit those points.
Yeah,
and the music is similar. Like the music is not a banger, but it's also not laid back. It just kind of very like like it just drives on and like gets to the point relentlessly.
I do get kind of like a content exhaustion from this song.
That's fair.
Like I maybe it's just working here. Like I picture like trying to write the headline for a story about this song. And like all like the eight different things you'd have to fit into it is just like, oh my God. But no, I mean, I sort of agree with Lindsay. I think like it's a good conveyance for the Jay-Z verse. And I do think that it fits on the album in terms of Meek's kind of overall narrative. And it's good content. I don't know how much the song's really going to stick with me, but yeah, there's definitely like a lot of stuff to kind of latch on to here.
So breaking news on the on the Must Hear Music taping.
Ooh.
Jay-Z just tweeted.
Oh.
The line clearly meant, "Don't pit me against my brothers, no matter what our differences are," parentheses, red hat. "Now go pick up Meek album, Drake and Meek on there together."
Great. So Jay-Z confirmed.
Cool. Nice little plug.
First
producing.
Tweet that's, in that's a year fun. And a half. He just sent a follow-up tweet saying, "Listen to the Must Hear Music podcast discussion."
That's
shout
sweet.
Out
so weird.
Joe
How
Lynch.
How would he know that?
That's Don.
Wow.
I'm a nice guy.
He has ears everywhere.
So I have a question, like a history question, I guess mostly for Joe. Like, Is the animosity between Michael Jackson and Prince really that legendary? Like, I mean, I know that they were kind of rivals, and maybe like they tried to collaborate a couple times and it didn't go so well. But like to put those as like the ultimate example of two greats being pitted against each other, it's like, I don't really think of MJ and Prince that way.
I think here's what I would say. I think in the public mind, like, no, those two were not at odds. But what I've heard, like in terms of more like industry people and privately, is like, yeah, there actually was like a real like not like both. It was super competitive between them, and with absolutely no warmth. Like they were not super enamored with each other personally.
Okay.
So I think it's a fair enough comparison to make.
And we had this this quick discussion in the morning meeting today. If they are MJ and Prince, who's who?
That's a really good. I mean, that's a.
I think it's obvious that it's Kanye's Prince and Jay-Z is MJ.
I tend to agree with that. Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I kind of thought the opposite.
I thought the opposite too.
Yeah.
It's an interesting litmus test here. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, what do you tweet us?
Yeah. Let us know what you think.
Kanye, Jay-Z, which one is Prince? Which one's MJ? And then in that, you know, estimation, who's I don't know. Who else? George Michael. Which Rick Ross is George
Rick
Michael,
Ross
a fellow
on that
80s
note.
Pop titan.
Drake is Whitney Houston, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anyways, yeah. Let's just listen to the song. So here it is. Jay-Z, Rick Ross, Meek Mill. Song's called "What's Free" from the album Championships. What's free? Free is when nobody else could tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my niggas I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my niggas stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my niggas I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life was free. In the land of the free where the blacks enslaved. I'm shocked we got through a discussion of Meek Mill without Jason talking about Philadelphia or the Sixers or
I
something.
I want to also point out that Andrew is also from Philadelphia.
That's true. I mean,
and
that's true. No,
more from Philly than I am.
I feel like you talk, well, at least I hear you talk about it more.
Well, you sit closer to him in the office.
That's
but
true.
I did have written down that Rick Ross does reference Gamblin' Huff, the legendary Philly Soul producer.
I love that
song.
Line.
Yeah. No, it's a really good line.
And also Michael Rubin's Philadelphia 76ers co-owner gets a shout out for his, you know, he visited Meek in prison a number of times. I think helped kind of integrate him into the franchise. Meek was a very high profile presence at a number of Sixers games last year, so you know, nice shout out to Michael Rubens there.
Well, I don't know how sports work, but like they used his music? Is there like coming out
when
to
they
the
do the slam dunks?
Music?
That's when they play the music.
That was more of an when Eagles thing than a 76ers thing, but I'm sure they still play Meek Mill at the Sixers games pretty
they
regularly.
Do.
For the dunk music.
Yeah.
For the dunk tunes. Okay.
Yeah, they say
whenever someone's
on the court,
winding so up to do a dunk, that's what they play.
All right. Cool.
Sports.
I get it. I totally get it now. Yeah. All right. Let's do. We got a lot of high profile stuff this week. New Miley Cyrus and Mark Ronson.
Yes.
And Jason, nothing breaks like a heart.
Ugh. Isn't that so true, Joe?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Definitely a thing that people say in casual conversations. Like, yeah, man, you know, nothing breaks like a heart.
I just broke this glass, but yeah, it just doesn't break quite like a heart.
Yeah. So, Miley Cyrus, Mark Ronson. It seems like this is, I don't know if this has been confirmed, but it seems like this is more of a Mark Ronson featuring Miley Cyrus in anticipation of his next album. Yeah. Okay. So that is confirmed.
Yeah.
Which actually puts it in a pretty interesting position, because the last time Mark Ronson had a lead single to a Mark Ronson album, it was one of the biggest hits of all time, Uptown Funk.
Mm-hmm.
So now there was a lot of hype around, you know, Miley Cyrus has been kind of quiet since Younger Now, which feels like a long time ago at this point, but it was only like 14 months ago.
Yeah, more like Younger Than, am I right?
Wow. Too true. Nothing Breaks Like a Heart nice. Comes out, and I think it's fantastic. I think that this song is just a perfectly constructed country pop song, and I kind of wish that we had gotten a little bit more of this effortlessness on Younger Now. Like it seemed like that was almost straining to break away from the bangers era for Miley and create this new persona, where this just sounds, you know, obviously this, even more so than some of the songs on Younger Now, leans into the country music kind of melodies and arrangement more, but it feels more natural. Like it feels like everybody here is really comfortable. I love the production on this. Like there are strings and there's like a really nice bass groove, and I mean, I don't know if it's like I don't think it'll necessarily it definitely won't be an Uptown Funk in terms of, you know, inescapability, but I think that this could be a hit. And yeah, I was a little bit surprised about how much I like this song.
Yeah. We've been talking about 2019 predictions a lot around here. One for myself. I think I will be a huge fan of country disco.
Wow.
Like, you mean like High Horse, Kacey Musgraves?
I mean, yeah, like that's still an album that I somehow have not really dove into yet.
What?
I know.
That's crazy.
You
can't
say
that in front of... You do work here, right?
Like, you can't say that in front of Joe. You just can't.
He just jumped across the table.
I don't even love that album, but I'm surprised.
For those listening to the podcast, Joe is like stomping around right now. And...
No, but I mean, this song is so fun and like very Dolly-esque in a way that works well.
Salvador, yeah, totally.
Yeah. The reason I know it's off of a Mark Ronson album, the like iTunes bio for this song was just insanely revealing in a way that I haven't seen in a long time.
That's
like
weird.
It pointed out, I read it last night and I sent a screenshot to Rebecca because there's like a lot of good information in there. But one of the things that I found really interesting, actually, so they had worked on this song before the fires in California, and really tragically, Miley lost her home, and she sings of a burning house. So,
she wrote that before.
She wrote that before, in the context of like a relationship, like the walls are burning down of this relationship. And so now it was saying how it has like an even more profound
added resonance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I think, just an interesting fact to point out. But overall, absolutely love the song. The music video is fun. I didn't
see the music video. I didn't know there was one.
What? This was my
night. You got to check out the music video.
Yeah. I think it works really well.
Yeah, I still haven't totally recovered from like the Folktronica moment 4 or 5 years ago, like the Avicii Wake Me Up and like Timber and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I still kind of just getting like this, like the tingling of that is a very unpleasant experience for me.
Oof.
But this one, I actually like the song more than I expected for that reason, because like the integration of the electronic and the folky influences is a little bit more seamless than I expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's sort of what Mark Ronson's good at in general, is kind of stitching together different genres and making it sound like it's very clear what he's calling back to, but it doesn't feel forced. So in that sense, it's a good partnership. And yeah, I think the song's pretty good. It's not like a knockout to me, but it's like a good first taste. Like, it makes me want to hear more of what's to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really like it. I think, Jason, you were right to point out the, I think it works so nicely for Miley because, you know, she comes from a country background. Like that's basically what she grew up with. And even if that's not what we primarily identify her with genre-wise, like it's certainly a comfortable wheelhouse for her. And this, like, the arrangement and her singing style on this is super country, not really contemporary, but more maybe like 70s 80s style. But the music, Mark Ronson is such a like consummate crate digger. Like there's just like so much like different things going on. Like the strings sound like they're out of like a 1950s like vocal pop album. The shuffling, like, kind of jazzy beat sounds like something that would have been maybe from the 60s on, you know, kind of a country soul record when they, you know, would sometimes have little dalliances with jazz rhythms.
Country soul, like, with jazz dalliances, all
yeah.
right.
Yeah, but there was a lot of, like country, like, R&B kind of, like, bleed over in the 60s.
For sure.
Maybe not a lot, but some of that. Anyways, and, you know, Mark Ronson is just one of those, like, you know, I don't know personally, but I'm assuming he just has, like, more records in his possession yeah. than he's ever even listened to. And
it wasn't one of his albums, like, literally called Record Collection?
It was. Yeah. It was.
There you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, and this just, like, you know, betrays the fact that he has deep music history appreciation, and I think he's put mildly in a very comfortable territory, but it also still sounds modern and interesting, so mm-hmm. I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. Let's listen to it. So it's Miley and Mark Ronson, and it is called Nothing Breaks Like a Heart, and here it is.
Heard you on the phone last night. We live and die by pretty lies. You know it. We both know it. These silver bullet cigarettes, this burning house, there's nothing left, it's smoking. We both know it. We got all night to fall in love, but just like that we fall apart. We're broken, we're broken. Nothing gonna save us now.
All right, that was new Miley and Mark. And next and last, we've got Lindsay's pick, Nothing Personal. Yeah. But you just chose
didn't
the
realize.
Or no, wait, we actually have two left. So you are the penultimate pick. Billie Eilish, Come Out and Play.
Yes.
So that's your pick. So why don't you tell
yeah,
us about,
let me tell you guys about
the Bilster.
So this was released, I believe, to soundtrack an Apple ad/mini film/commercial. And
sure.
Something we've talked about recently is how, like, ads as music videos might be coming back in fashion. And this is a perfect example of that. It's just done a little more cleverly in the way that it's a heartwarming short film to watch instead of being, like, fed, like, by our
sure.
products.
What happens in it? What's so heartwarming about
it? It's very adorable. It's animated, I should say, so I'm obviously biased. But it's all about, I think the title is Share Your Gifts, but not, like, your... like not something you purchase for someone and give it to them, but like your gifts as a person.
Aww,
it's very,
nice.
Very cute. I recommend everybody watch it.
But also it. Like, wouldn't you rather have a present?
No.
Share
yeah.
gifts.
The presence of someone's gift is
ooh,
the present.
That's so
ponder
deep.
Ponder that. But so the song, it's yet again, like another lane that Billie's going down, more acoustic, but yet still with this really hard hitting bass at the beginning. And the thing I find most fascinating is that for someone as new as Billie, we're not having to wait for her to show different sides of herself as an artist. She's just doing it constantly with every new song that she's putting out, which is at a pretty frequent pace. And I think that kind of links back to what Ariana said recently on Twitter, where she doesn't want there to be eras anymore. I feel like Billie might be the first artist to come along who... from the start, like, there's never going to be an era of Billie.
Right.
Because she's constantly giving us, she can rap, she can play the ukulele, she can do, like...
She plays the ukulele, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oof.
She can do trap music, she can do an acoustic song. Like, she's all over the place, but at least in my opinion, it works all the time in her favor. She has 3 songs on the Hot 100 right now, and they all sound pretty different. So... that is the main reason I chose this. It's just like one more in the canon of all the things that she can do.
Yeah, I mean, you all think know how that I've long predicted big things for Miss Eilish, and
yeah.
I'm a big fan. And you know, we talk a lot about kind of what alternative means in 2018, and it means a lot of different things, and it also kind of means nothing. But I think in the best case scenario, it means someone like Billie Eilish who just doesn't really fit anywhere specifically and does so many different things where she doesn't really sound like anybody else, but she always sounds like herself.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only other act that's kind of doing that right now to such an extent is the one we just talked about in the 1975. And I think
enough with that.
About the 1975 a little bit.
That's
more.
A reason why both the 1975 and Billie Eilish are kind of reaching the levels of success that they are, is because they do feel so distinctly themselves and they're constantly changing, they're constantly doing new and interesting things. And it doesn't feel self-conscious in terms of the experimentation. It just feels like Billie Eilish. She's a really good songwriter. Her voice is a really interesting texture. She's a good producer, and she works with good producers. Like, every song of hers has these kind of like little distinct moments that just, you know, make you pause. And she, to be on such an advanced level at such a young age, you know, it's almost not worth harping on at this point because she's already done it for a year and a half, 2 years. But it's still just mind-blowingly impressive. And I think the sky's the absolute limit for her.
Yeah.
I agree. The one thing I'll add is that, you know, I think all of these songs, like this one and You Should See Me in a Crown, and I love, like, my favorite's Ocean Eyes, but I'm really excited. I feel like I agree that, like, she keeps going up and up and up. I feel like she's going to release her version of a big pop song at some point in the next 12 months.
So do you have, like, a song in mind, like is this gonna be like her royals, or like what song would you say she's gonna get
to? Her Closer? Is she gonna do a Chainsmokers collab?
I mean, I actually kind of was thinking of Halsey. Like, I think that the way Halsey has kind of streamlined her sound and kind of, you know, trimmed off some of the edges and gotten into this place where, like, anything she releases is radio fodder. I don't know if that is exactly what Billie Eilish is going to do, but I do think that she is headed toward this place where she's going to release, like, a big song. And again, I'm just excited for that because I think you have, like, all of these songs, like, they feel like almost like being on the runway and she's about to take off.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Who doesn't love being on a runway? My favorite parts of being
taxiing,
on a plane.
She's taxiing. She's
a delight.
Line, you know.
Not to play total devil's advocate, but I'm a very, very big Billie fan, and I've seen her live a couple times, spoken with her a few times this year. So I cannot see her doing something that seems obvious in any way. Like, one of the things that's most interesting, and this is derailing the conversation for a minute, but she wears different perfumes when she's around different people. Because she doesn't want anyone to associate her with, like, or she likes certain people to associate her with one scent, but she doesn't want to be known. She doesn't want to be known, like, universally by one scent.
You guys have only gotten my professional scent.
Yeah, see, I don't know your business casual scent.
Nutley Jason scent.
You know? But just, like, that's how intricately her mind works about things, mm-hmm. that I can't see her wanting to do something that, like I said, has been done, like working with the Chainsmokers or working with someone that people are, like, waiting for her
How many times do you think the Chainsmokers have called Billie Eilish?
Every day.
Oh, yeah. she definitely has their number blocked at this point. They probably have to go, like, they're calling on their friends' phones. Like,
I think I'm on Jason's side. I feel like, I'm not saying it's the Chainsmokers, but, like, I feel like something like that's going to come.
It could be the sort of thing where she works with a Chainsmokers type once, and then the label's like, okay, great, do 12 more of those. And she's like, no, I want to do, like, a country IDM album now.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I mean, I feel like we've, you know, sung her praises to the heavens, mm-hmm. so to not belabor that, I will say something negative.
What?
Although, no, the song is great. Like, it's cool. It's a good acoustic song. I love the vibrating ambient textures, like, at the mm-hmm. end of it. I will say, and again, you know, she's only 16, but lyrical demerits. It opens with two cliches. She's, you know, the first lines are wake up and smell the coffee, and then something about is the glass half full or half empty. It's like, you know, like,
cruel taskmaster Joe Lynn's just handing out those demerits.
Right, exactly. But I mean, yeah, I'm on the same. I mean, I feel comfortable saying that only because we've just, you know, like, said she's the second coming of Christ for 5 minutes here. But anyways, let's listen to our Lord and Savior, Billie Eilish. The new song is called Come Out and Play.
Wake up and smell the coffee. Is your cup half full or empty? When we talk, you say it softly, but I love it when you're awfully quiet. Quiet.
Wow, I can't believe listening to that snippet. I can't believe Come Out and Play was an Offspring cover after all.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, that's so strange.
Yeah, didn't see that coming. Yeah.
Title jail for Billie Eilish.
Oh, man. Yes. I forgot. I love EW used to do this great thing, Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, thank you.
Where they would, like, people listening to the podcast probably don't
EW folded in the early 90s. Nobody's heard from it since. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't, who aren't in the industry.
I just meant, like,
don't,
you.
No, whatever.
Don't defend your
so
acronym.
Glad you
go on.
Anyways, used to do this. Maybe they still do, actually, this great feature where they would take, like, if a new song came out that was called, like, Come Out and Play, then they would, like, review it as opposed to, like, the old song with that title. It was a very fun feature. I loved that.
What I would really respect is if this song was titled Come Out and Play, parentheses, keep them separated, and still had absolutely nothing to do with the Offspring song.
That'd be great.
Yeah. That would be big merits. That would be two merits to cancel out the two demerits.
Right. That's good.
Anyway, so next and last, we have another Andrew pick. It's called Playboy Style. It comes to us from Clean Bandit, featuring Charlie XCX and Bad Baby. Not exactly the heavy hitter,
no,
you know, that
super team
that Jay-Z, Meek Mill, and Rick Ross was, but
a big three by their own,
some
right?
Names.
Yeah.
They are three names.
Yeah, Clean Bandit, very hit or miss for me the last couple of years. They came out with Rather Be about 4 years ago,
which is such a masterpiece.
Absolute perfect song. Couldn't ask for a better one. Launched Jess Glynn's career, at least in this country. But since then, it's been a lot of kind of working with vocalists who I don't really think are that impressive or noteworthy. A lot of Anne Marie types. I'd say no shade to Anne Marie. Maybe like a tiny bit of shade to Anne Marie. But you know, they've been working their way back a little bit recently. I thought Solo with Demi Lovato was pretty strong. I actually thought that was going to be a bigger hit than it was.
Yeah, I was surprised it wasn't bigger.
And obviously working with Charlie XCX, if you're looking for a singer to kind of put her stamp and like really reflect some personality and some interesting songwriting on a song, she's as good a modern pop star as you could choose for that. And you know, it's a fun kind of like faux reggae bounce. It's you know, Charlie sounds like she's having fun with it. The lyric "crying on the marble where we used to fuck till dawn" is one of the weirdest lyrics I've ever heard in a pop song, because who fucks till dawn on marble?
Crying on the marble?
On the marble.
All right.
We used to fuck till dawn. So that's where she puts in her marathons, I guess.
Well, interesting is that the line before that is "every night at 3 a.m. I'm banging on your door, crying on the marble where we used to fuck till dawn." It's like
the geography
marble
of that is kind of
weird.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyway.
Interesting.
I don't know, I like to go to sleep at some point.
It contains multitudes of the Charlie XCX lyrics, but not to forget about Bad Baby, who continues to prove that, you know, she's got some bars. You know, for a 15-year-old former viral sensation, she actually can
really
rap
good.
A little bit. Yeah. So.
Oh man, when she raps, "Gotta treat me like a lady, but I'm still a bad baby." I was so happy.
Oh, too good. Okay, this is not like a lyrical gem, but I will say, like, flow wise, like I think she's sort of the, I don't want to say standout on this song, but like
she wins the song. No, you can totally.
Yeah, like honestly,
I totally think she wins.
I think she is. I think of this song, like my main takeaway, as someone who probably hasn't really given Bad Baby the time of day, I'm like, yeah, actually, she's pretty good. She's got a good flow. I mean, you know, like I'm not signing up. I'm not joining the fan club just yet. But like, it's good. I mean, the song itself, I'm not wild about. Like the reggae vibe in the chorus is a little lame. The Destiny's Child kind of rip off acoustic guitar is like fine. It's a fine song.
Yeah,
it's not a classic certainly, but it's a winner, I think.
Yeah,
it's fun
okay.
And it's quirky and
I'm a bigger Clean Bandit fan than you. I think they most of their hits are actually like very strong. I love
not a fan of that rockabye.
Yeah, whatever.
But
I love
it's
Sean
undeniable
Paul.
At the same time.
It is undeniable.
Symphony is pretty good.
It's in my head all the time, even if
I love
I'm not
Solo. I love Disconnect, which wasn't a hit, but with Arena. That song is incredible.
Yeah. Well, it was just fascinating when we were doing a beat opener on them. We were getting all this chart information and their sales information, and I think they're just more massive than anyone realizes.
Certainly in the UK, they're enormous. Here it seems like one of those things where like every 3 years they'll have exactly one top 10 hit and then they'll disappear for another 3 years and come back
again.
But
the hit like stays. That's the thing. Oh, yeah. Like their songs definitely have staying power. Maybe not this one as much, but overall.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. How long has it been since the last one? Like a year and a half? Might have to hold out a little bit longer on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the album is sort of interesting because as I learned in the wonderful beat opener in Billboard
reading.
Magazine, it has like features on every track, mm-hmm. but at the same time, they're like, this is the most individualistic we've ever been on an album.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think, are you laughing at something?
I'm laughing at his, sure.
But whatever you say,
sure,
whatever
Jan. You say, Clean Bandit.
There was at least one feature on every track. I think there's usually two or more. But it seems like their next album they would like to do is just a trio.
The singer-songwriter Clean Bandit album?
Yeah, that's what
we're getting. Can't wait. A lot of weepy strummers, I bet.
Weepy strummers.
That is the takeaway from this podcast. Weepy strummers.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right, well, let's listen to it. It's Playboy Style, Clean Bandit featuring Charlie XCX and Bad Baby.
Cover, kept it on the low. Said that you meant nothing, but my feelings really grew. Not that I regret you, but I met you when insane.
Yeah, didn't need forever, but I needed just a call. Every night at 3 a.m. I'm banging on your door, crying on the marble where we used to fuck till dawn. What you doing to me? It used to be a scene from a movie. Now I'm crying tears like a baby. Looking in the mirror, I don't know me.
All right, that was New Bandit, and yeah, that's all
it's
we got
clean
for this
bandit,
one.
Bandit, Joe. Clean Bandit.
New, yeah, we're on a first name basis, or second surname basis, whatever. I don't know.
What a show!
Yeah. What a show! Yeah, well, you know, it's we're approaching the end of the year, so pretty soon we're going to be looking at
best of
2018 roundup, as well as our best Xmas music of 2018.
Ooh, roundup. We didn't record a Must Hear Music episode on over the Thanksgiving holiday, but obviously the hour long Rita Ora Phoenix dissertation is coming. I think we can all agree that.
I think we got saved, but yeah, saved by the holiday.
Yeah.
From that. Oh, no.
A gift to us all.
Anyways, thank you for listening, one and all. And, you know, tweet us any recommendations you have, or, you know, as we get towards the end of the year, like what your favorites have been. And thank you, Andrew, Lindsay, and Jason, as always.
Wow. Always an honor.
And we will catch y'all next week.
Bye, guys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.